episode of Multiverse Musings, a DC Comics podcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam. I was going to say co-host. And with me is my co-host, Jordan. Jordan, how's it going?
I'm super today, Adam. Very excited to be here. Still coming off a high from Dragon Con.
Nice.
And eager to chat about what we're chatting about tonight, and eager to talk with our guest as well. We got an awesome guest here today as well.
Yeah, we're talking Freedom Fighter and the Ray, the animated...
Freedom Fighter the Ray.
Okay, I always say and the Ray, whatever. Yeah, but we're talking about the recently released... Blu-ray, and I think it's DVD as well, and that was basically adapted from the CW Seed series. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're talking about, and Jordan has found us a guest who was gracious enough to come on and chat with us about it. And who is that guest?
Yeah, well, this is my friend Andy. We actually met at Dragon Con in 2017, and I thought she'd be perfect to have on for this episode. Plus, I thought we could chat a little bit about Dragon Con, because we just saw each other there again this year, and that just wrapped up. So, yeah, how's it going?
Good, good. Yeah, I think actually we met on Twitter first, and then I talked
That's
you into
right.
going to the Gotham panel at Dragon Con, and then, you know, the rest is history. But, yeah, no, I haven't finished unpacking from Dragon Con, but yeah, I'm Andy, and I can be found on Twitter at AndyTweets. Kind of self-explanatory. I've been writing about and talking about superhero media, usually live-action versions, since the Smallville fandom, so I go way back.
Yes.
Yes, that was my first big online fandom was Smallville back
nice.
In the day. And, yeah, I'm basically I do a lot of superhero cosplay, and I do a lot of... I used to blog about Legends of Tomorrow, but that's taken a back seat. But, yeah, I've done a lot of stuff about talking about comic book media on the Internet. I'm happy to be here. Thanks, you guys, for having me.
Awesome. It's good to have you. Before you guys get into a little bit about Dragon Con, since you mentioned your foray into superhero online fandom, since we're talking Freedom Fighters and what is it? The Ray? Just the Ray, Jordan? I want to get it right you don't have an attack over there. All right, so Freedom Fighters and the Ray. Since we're talking about that...
No. You had it right the first time with the
whole. Oh shit! I said Ray. I said and the Ray again. This is going to be a whole thing all night. Whatever. So since we're doing a movie that's set in the DC CW Arrowverse, I have to ask, what is your favorite Arrowverse TV show?
Well, I started out watching Arrow, and then I sort of transitioned into The Flash becoming my favorite. And I tuned into The Flash because I heard that two of my favorite actors were going to be playing two of my favorite characters, which is Wentworth Miller and Dominic Purcell.
Mm-hmm.
Were going to be playing. I was a big Prison Break fan back in the day, and I just heard that they were going to be playing Captain Cold and Heatwave, and I've always had a soft spot for them. I've always had a soft spot for The Flash's Rogues Gallery to begin with, but they were always my cheesy favorites.
Right.
And just to hear these great actors were going to be portraying them before The Flash ever premiered, I was just sunk hook, line, and sinker. And when they moved over to Legends of Tomorrow, then I became primarily a Legends of Tomorrow fan because I sort of followed them. So
sure.
I think that's probably still for me, even though this show's had its ups and downs, I'd still the most fun, especially with the recent addition of John Constantine.
Right.
I think he's really revitalized the show a lot.
And I think in terms of just about Legends, I think I've said it before, Jordan, that Dominic Purcell is my favorite character on the show. Heatwave, so yeah, I'm right there with you.
And I think I'm with you there, actually.
Yeah, he's just too funny. I mean, look, they can have a rotating roster all they want, but I hope he stays for the duration.
You gotta keep
serious.
That's one of my favorite things about the show is that it's allowed people to see how funny he is.
Yeah.
Because on Prison Break and on other shows he's been on, he's always played like very serious, intense, you know, straight man character. And on Legends, he's just completely
it's hilarious,
out of control. Yes.
It's insane. But yeah, tell us about both of your experiences at Dragon Con. What was that like?
Well, before we forget, I want to do our countdown.
Yeah.
To the next that we do to the next DC movie. Right now we are 22 days away from DC Superhero Girls Legends of Atlantis. So yeah, we got that to look forward to.
Cool.
But yes,
Jordan likes his countdown, so there we go. We got that out of the way.
Dragon Con, DragonCon. Andy, why don't you start? How was your DragonCon this year? Because we only saw each other briefly this year.
Two ships passing in the night this year. Yes, I literally just hopped in, said hi, Jordan, and hopped right back out because I was like on my way to another panel. This year, I was the assistant fan content director for the alternate history track, which is one of my big loves at DragonCon for the last 6 or 7 years, and I made friends with the people who run it, and they asked me to come on board and help out. So my time was mostly preoccupied with that. We did a lot of different things this year than we normally did. We had a lot of new TV shows, we had all the history shows, and we had a lot of the we had a few sing-alongs, and we did drunk history, and then we just did a bunch of stuff that we hadn't really emphasized as much or done as much of before over on that track. And for the most part, it was a huge learning experience for me and just as a group for our track. But it was a lot of fun. It was very tiring. You know how Dragon Con is. You make a list of thousand things you want to do, and if you get 10 of them done, you're happy. So that's how much, I had a lot of fun. I had, I've been there. I think this was my 14th year going. I haven't gone continuously. I think my first year was 2003, but I missed a couple of years, so either my 13th or 14th year, and it's just, I never get tired of it. It's just, there's always something new, you always meet new friends. This year I was actually super blown away by the gaming area, which is literally an entire building of games, tabletop games. There's a whole arcade that's a whole floor. I was just completely blown away by it. I felt like it was like the Narnia of Dragon Con. It's like their secret door. The whole other world there. It was really amazing. So that's how my Dragon Con went. There was not enough time to do everything I wanted, but I had a great time.
Nice.
Yeah, that's how it is. You wish you could do everything. I'm glad to hear that. It was a great experience once again. So that is awesome.
What about you, Jordan? What was your experience like?
It was quite the experience for me this year. I mean, it was, I had a dream come true this year at Dragon Con, which was meeting Tom Welling and, I met Michael Rosenbaum there last year, but meeting him again and meeting Aaron Ashmore as well. That was sort of, I'm still coming off a high from that because I got Tom and Michael to sign my Clark and Lex Smallville Funko Pops. And then I went to both the Smallville panels. First one was Tom and Michael and Aaron and Erica Sarah as well. And then the second one was just Tom and Michael. But those two panels were incredible. I got to ask, at the first panel, I prioritized getting a seat near the question line. So I was actually the first question. And I got to ask Tom what his favorite Anna moment from Smallville was.
Why am I not surprised that that was your question?
Yeah, I guess that's not so surprising. but then at the second panel, I prioritized getting a front row seat. So I was actually able to get a front row seat at the second panel, which was very cool. I've never had a front row seat at a cast panel before. So that was very exciting. So, and actually in line for one of the panels, I met another diehard Klana shipper, and we geeked out about that for a little bit. So that was really cool. I talked about this earlier. I was on three fan panels this year. I did the Phantom is a Way of Life panel, the Krypton panel, and the Black Lightning panel. So that was a lot of fun. And I'm trying to think what else. I did a lot of stuff. I went to this is something that'll be cool to bring up. I went to a DC Comics artist panel where they had several DC artists there, and I got to tell Jill Thompson how much I loved her story from Action Comics Special #1. So you know what? We forgot to do our comic recommendations this episode.
Yeah, that's right.
That's going to be my comic recommendation, is Action Comics Special #1, which is sort of the wrap-up issue of Dan Jurgens' run, but it had some...
that was from a few months ago, right?
It was a couple months ago. Yeah. I'll just bring it. This will be my recommendation.
Oh, that's fine. That issue.
Yeah. And I got to talk to Jill Thompson about it. She drew the Lex Luthor story where it was like Clark, and he was at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and he was sort of roasting a bunch of the other DC characters, including Lex Luthor. So I complimented her on how much I enjoy that story, and I got to ask her about that. So that was cool.
Nice.
I went to a bunch. Michael Bailey did a bunch of amazing Superman panels this year, and I went to several of those. So that was really cool. He did this one that was called Challenge of the Superman Nerds, and I won a bunch of prizes there. That was pretty fun. And I of course got to see a bunch of friends from and made some new friends as well. Of course, Andy included, and friends that I saw from before, but made some new friends as well, like that fellow clown shipper that I was very happy to meet. I'm trying to think what else. I mean, definitely the highlight for me was all the Smallville stuff this year. I mean, because it was jam-packed with Smallville stuff this year. I didn't have the money to meet them, but there were some other Smallville people there, in addition to the ones I mentioned. William B. Davis, Mayor Tate from Smallville was there. Manuel Vauer, Helen Bryce from Smallville, she was there as well. Just a huge year for Smallville this year, but definitely exciting. Oh, I showed Tom my Smallville tattoo, and I got to tell him how much the show means to me and how it changed my life. So I was really happy to get a chance to tell him that. And then seeing Michael again, I told Michael this inside joke from his podcast. When I went up to him to get my pop signed, I just went up to him and I said, "Asshole lips." And if you listen to his podcast, then you get that inside joke. Mm, but,
that does not surprise me. That's an inside joke from Michael Rosen.
Right?
He's a good time.
Oh, yeah.
It was from his episode that he did with Dax Shepard, and it was an inside joke he had, and Michael got a kick out of people saying that. He wrote that on my podcast.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. If you get him started, we met him at the... we met him years ago at the Fan Expo over here, and... He signed. We got his autograph, and one of my friends had his head shaved. So, and he was very Lex Luthor style. And so he started, you know, jokingly chastising my friend for stealing his haircut, which was kind of funny. He's quite a character, that's for sure.
Yeah, Michael's been doing the con circuit for a while now, but Tom is pretty new to it. I think he only started doing cons last year.
Yeah.
It was earlier this year. What happened was, Michael's been doing it forever, and I think Michael finally convinced Tom, because he convinced him to go to Austin Con with him, I think. That was the first one they did together earlier this year. That our buddy Zach Moore from Always Hold On to Smallville, he went there, and he got to meet them there. So I think Michael got Tom hooked on going to cons from that, because now they've been going to a bunch of them together. They went to two cons this past weekend together. Just a couple days ago, I actually got to watch one of their panels online. The one they did at in Salt Lake City.
There is one online that I saw, but I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah, if it's the one I'm thinking of, the one from Salt Lake City, that's a great panel. I can send you the link if you want. It's hilarious.
Cool. That's cool. I'm glad he's joining that. I think he seems to be having a good time, so I'm really glad that he's joined the con circuit, because I think, you know, it's really... I've met Michael Rosenbaum a few times too, but I unfortunately did not get a chance to see either one of the Smallville panels at Dragon Con. Aww. Because... It was bad planning on my part, though, because it was I was on two panels at the same time. But next year I may be a little more mindful, because both of the track directors for both those panels were like, "Hey, if there's if there's anybody you want to see, let us know in advance and we'll try to." But I didn't do that. I was just lazy and I didn't. So the end result was that both panels ended up being scheduled directly at the same time as the two Smallville panels. But I heard great things about it. And I'm glad. Hopefully, he keeps doing more in the future, because they've gone over very well as far as I've heard.
Yeah. They were. I'm sorry you missed on those. That's a bummer. But yeah, they were amazing panels. And I think actually you can find those online. I'm pretty sure too.
Yeah, those are on
YouTube. DragonCon TV does their pack. So I think what is it? That's what they call it, right? DragonCon TV.
DragonCon TV.
I think if you buy that, you can get them. So, yeah.
Cool. Well, you mentioned comic recommendations. Andy, do you have any? Have you read anything recently or in the past that maybe you want to recommend?
So I've been on this massive JSA kick lately.
Cool.
And just digging up just anthologies, just because I was familiar with a lot of the characters.
Yeah.
From the Silver Age, and just I cosplayed one or two, and but I hadn't really read like a lot of the series because some of them are hard to find or expensive or you know. So I've been, I guess I don't know if that's really a recommendation.
Yeah, definitely.
A couple of JSA anthologies that I've kind of just been really enjoying and really just kind of getting to know the histories of some of these characters that are kind of taken for granted. In some canon and things like that. So I've just been having a good time learning about those guys.
Very cool. Nice.
Good thing to read to get ready for the Stargirl series.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's gonna be awesome. Just knowing that Jeff Johns is behind that and
former Smallville writer.
Yeah. Or the fact that he's written enough comics before even writing a script for Smallville, but yeah, okay, Jordan, we can go with a smaller reference. No, my recommendation would be the most recent Justice League issue that came out this past week. It was that title under the direction of Scott Snyder has just been phenomenal. It's so grand scale, and it's the Justice League, basically going up against the, I was going to say Doom Patrol, but Legion of Doom. It's tying into, there's a little bit of tie-in to the Batman, what was the medal, the Dark Knight's medal thing? There's a little bit of tie-in to that or fallout from that still happening, which is cool. And there's also a tease of a character. I don't want to spoil it for anybody that hasn't read it, but I think if memory serves, fans of the JSA will be very happy at the end of the most recent Justice League issue. Things are happening that leads me to believe, it's not confirmed at the end of the issue or anything, but I believe that either by the end of the year or the beginning of 2019, there will be a new JSA book. And so I hope that's the case. But there is a tease, a JSA tease, at the end of most recent Justice League. So I would definitely recommend reading that.
That would be amazing because I think the Arrowverse has done a little bit to introduce some of those characters to people who may have never...
Jordan, you'll be happy to hear this coming out of my mouth. I prefer the Smallville iteration than what Legends did.
I agree.
Legends was more of a taste. It was more like a little like.
Yeah, it was too minuscule for me to really like. I wanted to really get into it, but it's like, damn, that's not enough. I'd watch a whole show of this. Actually, that's what I was saying. I'm like, give me the whole show, make another spinoff. I don't care.
Now that's almost what we're getting with Stargirl.
Basically,
not
yeah. Well, they're gonna, they're gonna be involved. Yeah.
Yeah, it's mostly focused on Stargirl, but I mean JSA.
Well, you can essentially call it Stargirl and the JSA, really, when you think about it.
Yes, I believe that will be the case.
Yeah. So, sure.
That's great because I do remember that the general, if you can say that such a thing exists, the general fan reaction to the JSA was like, that's it? We wanted more. Like,
yeah.
They were just on screen for like 30 seconds or something like
that. And then they had the one episode where they were hiding, different members were hiding.
Time.
Yeah, right, yeah. And it's like, okay, but that's just, again, I want more. It's like, I'm greedy. I need more of this. But yeah, so I'm...
It's like at the grocery store when they give you the little sample things on the... toothpicks.
That's a perfect analogy.
yeah, exactly. The Costco sample snacks, I call them. but have either of you, just while we're on comic recommendations, have you guys read the Jeff Johns run of the JSA? Either of you?
Nope.
I've seen panels of it online, but I haven't actually picked up the whole issues. Nope.
That's a recommendation that I will strongly make. I think. It's phenomenal, it really is. And once you read those and you knowing that he's involved with the Stargirl show, It will bring a smile to your face, or at least it should. So yeah.
Well, he is a former Smallville writer after all, so.
Well, you have to throw that in again. During the first time, people didn't hear it.
Well, and I'm a fan of Geoff Johns because we have something in common. We're both big Captain Cold fans from way back.
Yeah.
So, he breathed a lot of new life in the comics in that as well, and that's one of his favorite characters too. So that is an endorsement as far as I'm concerned on many fronts.
So definitely when you guys get a chance, or when there's a Comixology sale or whatever, definitely catch up on some Geoff Johns JSA stuff. But since we talked a little bit about Stargirl, and which will be on the DC Universe streaming platform, maybe we should get into some news.
Yes, indeed. Well, we have news about, not about Stargirl, but other shows on the DC Universe streaming service. The first of which is Doom Patrol. We've got two pieces of casting news for Doom Patrol. The first of which is that Brendan Fraser is going to be playing Robot Man on Doom Patrol. Now, this is actually quite surprising because Jake Michaels had already been cast in the role for Titans. And so it's going to be very interesting to see whether they're just simply recasting it for Doom Patrol or whether there's going to be some sort of in-story explanation for the change. But that's very interesting because obviously Doom Patrol is spinning off from Titans and is in the same continuity, and all the other actors from Titans in the Doom Patrol episode of that are carrying over to Doom Patrol. So that's just sort of interesting.
Just to clarify, Jordan, I think there may have been some reshoots for that particular episode for some of the characters they had. Yeah.
So Brendan Fraser took over.
Well,
yeah. So you're saying, you think the reshoots have replaced Jake Michaels in that? You think Brendan Fraser is now in that Titans episode?
Could very well be, because I've heard, again, I don't have concrete confirmation, but I heard that there were some reshoots for certain episodes, but I don't know which episodes they were. That they could have been for that episode is what I'm saying.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, that'll be interesting to see. Like I was saying, Jake Michaels had already been cast in the role. Now, we also know now that Riley Shanahan is going to be playing is going to actually be doing the physical performance in the Robot Man armor,
right?
Call it, and that Brendan Fraser is going to be doing the voice and is going to be playing him in live action, like I guess when we see before his accident.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
This is all coming, I'm getting this from Craig Burns' article from Titans TV. And here's also the description for the character. A former race car driver, Cliff Steele was in a horrific accident that left his body uninhabitable. Cliff's brain was saved by the mysterious Dr. Niles Calder, who we'll be talking about in a minute.
Yep.
And he lives on in a powerful robotic body. I'll just go ahead and say, I have never seen Brendan Fraser in anything.
Are you joking?
I'm not joking.
Have you seen The Mummy?
Come on.
I've never seen The Mummy.
Encino Man?
What's that?
Encino Man, George of the Jungle. You had so many opportunities.
Never seen any of that. But,
You're too young for your own good, Jordan. That's your problem.
What?
You're too young for your own good. That's your problem.
He was definitely like an early 2000s movie staple.
Yeah.
He was in everything.
He was actually rumored for Superman at one point.
He was?
No, I mean, I know of his name. I know he's a big name. So that is the thing I was going to comment is I was going to say this is a pretty big name for Doom Patrol at the beginning. So
yeah.
That's the commentary I can give, but I've never actually seen him in anything. So.
Well, for me, and then we'll pass it to our esteemed guest, but for me, I'm thrilled just to see him working again because I like the guy.
Me too.
And I don't care what anybody says. I like the first Mummy. The first couple of Mummies, I enjoy it. I'm happy to see him get the role and welcome him into the DC family.
He actually was hanging out at Dragon Con this year, not as a guest. He was just sort of hanging around. And,
cool.
People ran into him in the hallways. I think he went to that Night of the Aquarium thing that they have at the Georgia Aquarium on the Saturday nights,
where Michael
was hosting. Yes, Michael Rosenbaum was hosting that. And but he actually came before Michael did, so he was just milling about and meeting people, and people had great experience meeting him. And I think he's a bit of like a geek himself.
Yeah, he seems like a nice guy too, which is cool.
Definitely, from by all accounts. I mean, there's some great pictures on Dragon Con. Dragon Con's Instagram of him just, you know, photobombing people. So I guess he was just sort of checking out, you know, what was in store for him after this,
yeah.
You know, maybe I don't think he does the con circuit very well. I think he does cons once in a blue moon, but I don't think he does it on a regular basis. Or maybe he was just there as a guest. Well, I don't know,
he'll probably have to go to Comic-Con, I guess, next year.
Yeah, I'm a fan of the Universal Monsters.
Me too.
A little kid. So the the Mummy series lives in that universe, and so I had to watch it when I was a kid. So I'm a fan, and I wish I wish good things for him, because he really is very talented, and it's good to see that he's making a something of a comeback.
And I'll take that Mummy over the Tom Cruise Mummy any day, which was which was just Mission Impossible with a monster. But that's another podcast. So yeah, I guess that's our trifecta of takes on Brendan Fraser joining the DC universe.
Yes. Well, moving on to more Doom Patrol casting, which I referenced Dr. Niles Calder earlier, the chief, and now we have casting for him as well, which will be actually another actor who I've never seen in anything before, and in this case, I've never even heard of this actor. At least Brendan Fraser I'd heard of. And knew he was a big name. This guy, apparently, though, we talked about it off air, apparently he is a big name, so you guys can speak to that. But, so yes, another big name, which is Timothy Dalton, has been cast as Niles Calder.
Yes. There are, of all our listeners, there's at least a good half of them that are screaming that you don't know a former Bond, Jordan. So you may get some hate tweets over that. And we'll give you his Twitter after, so you can direct all that there.
I think I've only ever seen one Bond movie.
And let me guess.
And it wasn't his.
It's one of the Daniel Craig ones, right?
His, no.
Right. It's one of the Daniel Craig ones.
It was one of the Daniel Craig ones.
Okay. Yeah, I figured. But which I'm not disparaging any of the Daniel Craig Bonds. Yeah, he is a Bond actor, the one-time Bond. He's the, as I said off-air that nobody heard, and this is not a slight, so nobody get mad at me. He is the Brandon Routh of Bond actors. He is what Brandon Routh was to Superman. Unfortunately. But here's the connection. If I'm remembering correctly, and I could be wrong, but I'm not. It's terrible to check while you're doing a podcast, so I'm not going to triple check. But I believe that Timothy Dalton played Jor-El in the Adventures of Superboy live-action TV series. I think it was a season 2 episode, if I remember correct, 2 or 3. But that's another area where some members of fandom would have seen him. So there's that. I think this is a huge get for the DC universe streaming service.
And he's a great actor. The last thing that I saw, I've seen him in a few things. He's done a lot of smaller roles that brought a lot of impact to what he was doing. And
right.
One of the things, the most recent thing I saw him in was Penny Dreadful. Now, I didn't see that.
Yes, that's right.
On our show.
Yeah.
But he brought so much gravitas to that role. He has such a presence, and he has that voice, that very resonant voice.
Yeah.
I think he'll bring a lot of charisma and presence to that role, and he definitely will elevate the series.
And it's funny because I don't know if you guys remember, but there were rumors that Kelsey Grammer was up for this role, but apparently it went to Timothy Dalton. And I think, no offense to Kelsey Grammer, who I love as Frasier, I think Timothy Dalton is an upgrade.
He does. Yeah, that's sort of those dark underpinnings to some of his performances, but I think will bring something interesting to the role.
So I'm excited.
It was George Lazenby who played.
Oh, my mistake. Sorry. Let's see. There you go. I knew I might have been wrong. But yeah, either way, Timothy Dalton's great. Jordan, familiarize yourself with him.
I will soon, thanks to Doom Patrol.
Oh, well, you're going to wait. I'm stoked for this. The show, look, I don't know much about Doom Patrol, as I've said before. But I can't wait to see the show. I think it looks, we've seen some set pictures. Everybody looks.
I believe it's filming in Lawrenceville, in just outside of Atlanta, which actually could explain why Brendan Fraser was in town, because I think the show is actually being filmed in Atlanta.
Yeah, there you go.
But Atlanta is home to a lot of television shows. I think
Black Lightning.
The Vampire Diaries, yeah, Black Lightning films there, The Walking Dead films there, a lot of things. I think all of the recent Avengers films have filmed there. So they have a really terrific infrastructure for the film and television industry. So they have, you know, the crew that has experience with special effects and with audio. So they have sound stages, and they have the infrastructure necessary to really bring that show, elevate that show.
And now that you mention it,
I would love if I see them filming at some point. That would be the coolest thing.
Well, don't crash the set and get arrested, because I've said many times, I won't bail you out. You'll have to do the podcast from prison.
I was looking out for Black Lightning, hoping to see them at some point. I was so excited that they were filming here. And unfortunately, I never saw them. Apparently, at the mall where my local comic shop is, Cress Williams was spotted there. Like my buddy who owns my local comic shop, he saw Cress Williams there, but I didn't see him.
Was he buying comics?
No, I don't believe. I don't think he was actually in the comic shop. He was just walking in that mall.
Well, he should have bought the Detective Comics run then.
You can't miss Cress Williams. I met Cress Williams at MegaCon this year, MegaCon Orlando this year. He is so impossibly tall. Like, you can't miss him. He's got to be like 6'5" at least. I mean, I'm a tall person, and he's so tall. But he's such a sweet guy. So I'm sure if you did run into him, he'd be happy to say hello to talk to you.
Hopefully it'll happen.
One day, Jordan. It's a CW show, so you at least got a good 5 to 7 years. Try and make that
you know
up,
what
so.
It is? They do night shoots. They do a lot of night shoots, and they do a lot of whatever's not filmed in interiors. Yeah. They do a lot of night shoots. So that's probably, you've probably been going during the day, so you have to like look out for them at night.
You got to stay up later, Jordan. That's you got to.
You know, you say that about CW shows, and that's true for the most part. But whenever you say that, though, I've always got to bring up No Tomorrow, which is one of my favorite shows that got canceled after one season.
Oh no!
And listen, it was aptly named because it had No Tomorrow. So
ironically named.
Yeah, there it is. So you'll definitely get, but it's Black Lightning. I'm pretty sure you're gonna get your chance to make that happen, Drew. And then there's some more DC Universe related news, isn't there?
Yes, indeed. Moving on from Doom Patrol to Swamp Thing, here is an actor who I am very familiar with, getting cast in a role in Swamp Thing, which is Crystal Reed. Sophia Falcone on Gotham has been cast as Abby Arcane on Swamp Thing. So this is very exciting for me because I thought she was phenomenal as Sophia Falcone on Gotham. I thought she did a really great job sort of being this character who, for a lot of the season, I wasn't quite sure whose side she was on and who she was playing. And she was very manipulative and like she always had me guessing, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And so I thought she did a phenomenal job in that role. And I think it's awesome to see her coming back to the DC Universe again. On Swamp Thing as Abby Arcane.
Yeah, I think it's great. I liked her in Gotham as Sophia, and I agree with pretty much everything you said there. And it'll be good to see her getting she's one of the main cast, so it'll to see more of her in a more substantial, even more substantial role. So
I think Crystal Reed is one to watch. I remember first seeing her on Teen Wolf, where she played a very innocent, very sweet, very good-natured, character, where she was almost, the main love interest for the first couple of seasons, and she just played a very not necessarily just that ingenue kind of character, where she was very innocent and just the whole world of the supernatural was something very foreign to her, and then just to see her flip that completely and play this stone cold manipulator that played all of Gotham. I mean, that was just, to me, I did not expect that from her. Not because I didn't have high expectations, but just it was such an about face. And it just really shows that she has a tremendous range. So I'm very interested that what she's going to do with Abby, because I think I'm not an expert on Swamp Thing, but if I recall, the character of Abby is very smart.
Yes.
And she's not, and she's very, she has a lot of depth. No pun intended with the Swamp Thing, but I think she's gonna do a lot of interesting things with the character, and I think that she's gonna be one to watch.
It's funny.
Smart and caring is the way they describe her in the official description. Just thought I'd throw that out
there. It's funny that you mentioned that she was in in Teen Wolf, because if you think about it, we've had, so we have our Abby Arcane from Teen Wolf, we have
Roy
Harper from Arrow from Teen Wolf, and Superman, Tyler Hoechlin from, you know, Supergirl was from there as well. So the Teen Wolf cast is invading the several iterations of DC TV, so it's good.
There's a lot of vets among the Teen Wolf fandom, as far as I know. I'm not in the Teen Wolf fandom, but I have friends who are, and a lot of them are chatting who they'd like to see next, maybe fan casting Tyler Posey and or one of the
maybe somebody can get Lois from. I mean, they can find their Lois from there. Who knows?
Exactly.
They sort of got two Supermen from Teen Wolf.
Also.
Well, I don't actually. I've never watched Teen Wolf, but I was just looking at their cast online, and Dylan Sprayberry, I see, was.
Clark Kent from Man of Steel. Little Clark Kent from Man of Steel.
Mm-hmm.
Or not little, teenage, whatever age he was.
He was like the, he was the middle one. They had the really young one, and then the middle.
That's right. So teenaged,
It would be fun to see Holland Roden appear on Swamp Thing, because they played such foils to each other, Crystal and Holland. They played on Teen Wolf. It would be interesting, you know, to see that.
I've heard her being fan cast as Lois in the Arrowverse, actually, which is interesting. I've never seen Holland Roden in anything, so I have no. What's the expression? I have no dog in this race, or
right.
this race, something like that.
Look, I just want to cast Lois so that we can eventually get word that. And I have no idea if this is happening. I just hope it is that we are getting a Superman series with Tyler Hoechlin in the role. That's what I want out of this. But
that would be awesome. I like Holland, but I want Lois to be older, because part of the cool thing about the Arrowverse Superman is that he looks really young and that he's supposed to be a little bit older. So I think it'd be, and plus she's supposed to be older than Lucy, and Lucy is in her early 30s, late 20s, I think. So I'd like to see. I think that would be an interesting. To see a little bit of an older,
and they're already they're already in a relationship of some sort, whether they're married or not,
yeah.
I have no idea, but yeah.
Yeah, to see that, that'd be fun.
I've also heard some people wanting Kristen Crook to be cast as Lois.
Yeah, I'm not in that camp. No thanks.
I wouldn't be mad about that.
People have been throwing it out there. That would be such a I don't know, interesting, like, sort of almost, I don't want to call it a stunt casting, but, you know, like...
I think it would be almost too stunt casting if they did that.
We have Erica.
But that's a lot less prominent than Lois, right, I think.
So far she's only going to be in the one, as far as I know, she's only going to be in the crossover this year, right?
As of right now, she's going to be in two of the three, I think. Tyler's going to be...
In the Flash episode and the Super
Bowl
episode.
Yeah, Tyler's going to be in all three, and then she's going to be in two of the three. So she's.
But in terms of Kristen potentially being cast as Lois, it would be stunt casting in the sense that, you know, just going from playing Lana to playing Lois, in the same way that Tom Welling, I'm in this boat wanting him to be cast as Lex Luthor in the Arrowverse, seeing that sort of dynamic, sort of just the swap there.
Interesting.
Yeah,
Kristen is my favorite actress, like, period. So, like, any chance to see her return, like, to the DC universe, like, I would be all over that. Like, that, I would.
Filming wise, theoretically, she could do it, because right now she's off. Like, they're not filming the season two of her new series yet. So theoretically, she could do it. But I assume we've got to be hearing something about Lois relatively soon, because the thing airs in December, so they've got to be shooting it what?
Typically, they shoot it about like 9 or 10 weeks before it airs.
Yeah, so we're bound to be hearing casting for this thing soon.
Last year, I think they started filming it at the end of September, early October, if I recall correctly.
So,
it took a long time. It took it totally derailed the rest of their production. That's all they did for like a month. Everybody, like, I remember that for most of October, that's what they did.
So the casting should be coming down relatively soon.
So
we'll see where that lands. But it's just interesting that three or four Teen Wolf alumni have managed to find their way into the DCCW, and now. and now the DC Universe streaming service. But yeah, I like the Crystal. So I think we're all on board with the Crystal Reed casting. There's one other interesting bit of Swamp Thing related news, and that is that the tone of it will be very much of a hard R horror kind of show, which is appropriate for Swamp Thing. He's not your traditional, you know, superhero, so that rating works. They say that this is coming from let me get the source right, Slash Film. It's they're basing it off of Len Wein's run of Swamp Thing, is what I've read, and in terms of the look of Swamp Thing, by the way, the creatives involved, we've talked about, you know, James Wan is a producer on this thing.
Former Smallville writer and producer Mark Ryden.
I was waiting for that. and then Len Wiseman, who did the Underworld films and who directed the pilot for Lucifer, is directing the pilot for Swamp Thing. And so, but in terms of visually for Swamp Thing, they're going to go with a mix of CGI and practical effects.
Oh, nice.
So it won't just be straight up a guy in a suit. There'll be a mix of different things. So, but I like the sound of the tone. It sounds good to me. You know, R-rated horror kind of thing. And the creatives involved all intrigue me. So I'm ready for this thing to get going. That's I'll be tuning in when the DC Universe is made available to me. Because I still haven't been able to pre-order that thing. So. Get the Canadian version rolling, DC. I want to pay you for this thing. And so what do you guys think of the tone and the idea of a Swamp Thing that is part CGI, part practical?
That director has a really, really good track record of blending horror and supernatural elements and working with CGI and adding a very gallows humor tone to things, which if he brings that to the pilot of the show, I think that'll get the show off on a really good foot. It's definitely not like their other programming. It's going to be a completely different, I guess, something completely different for the for DC live media. It's, you know, we've never really seen that sort of, you know, dark humor with, you know, horror and supernatural elements. You know, in the DC verse, I think. So
yeah.
I think it's going to be interesting how it plays out if they keep adding really good versatile ensemble with some strong production crew. It's looking very promising to me.
Yeah. Jordan?
Yeah, that all sounds good to me. I'll get the thumbs up in my book.
Awesome. I think that brings the news portion to an end. So I think we can get on to the main topic of conversation for tonight.
The Ray.
Yes. And a bunch of freedom fighters, too. Jordan, why don't you give us the ever-trustworthy IMDb description of this film.
The Ray and a bunch of freedom fighters, too, is definitely not the official title of this film.
Right. Should be, though.
Freedom Fighters, The Ray. Yes, I got your IMDb description here. Are we thinking... one sentence
or
more than
one sentence? It's definitely a one sentence by IMDb's track record. I have no doubt. Yeah.
Okay, you're absolutely right. Yeah. It is on the longer end.
Oh, all right. So they went the extra mile for this one.
Long sentence.
Yeah, okay. Probably with punctuation errors as well, but go ahead, read it.
And actually, it's inaccurate, too.
Oh, okay, good. So then don't read it.
Oh, no. Surprise.
Well, I'll go ahead and read it anyway. It's not. I mean, some of it's accurate. There's just one thing that's quite inaccurate. But reporter Raymond Ray Terrell is investigating a group of government scientists who are developing a weapon using light when he's attacked with a genetic light bomb that ends up bestowing him with light-based superpowers.
Wait, when did he report on anything?
Yeah, first of all, he's not a reporter. And second of all, he's not investigating a group of government scientists who are developing a weapon using light.
All right, whoever wrote that should be fired from IMDb if they even paid.
You know, it's also on Wikipedia. It's also the description. I kind of wonder if
Is it the same description?
It's kind of, yeah, it's the exact same description, yeah.
Well, there's plagiarism at work here, so whoever copied who should be fired, well, they both should be fired because it's wrong. But yeah, it's...
I mean, they got his name right.
Well, there's that.
Light-based
yeah.
superpowers, right?
Well, points for trying, I guess. but no, let's go around and give... Let's just talk about, we're over the spoiler wall, so anybody that hasn't seen this that desires to see it unspoiled, well, pause this, go watch, and then come back and listen to us talk about it. What I'll say about, I'll start us off by saying, I really prefer watching the CWC shows in this format, where it's one cohesive entity. Like, you know, as a full movie, as opposed to like 5 minute or 10 minute, whatever they were, shorts.
Yeah.
I much prefer this. It's much better for the narrative. I kind of wish, and I didn't do this. I should have, but so shame on me. But I kind of wish I had watched this before, or at least rewatched the crossover from last year after seeing this, because to me this feels like a prequel to that.
It is.
Yeah,
totally.
Yeah. So that would have been a cool experience to watch it in that manner.
In that order.
Yeah. I love the animation style. I really do like this animation style quite a bit.
Bill Barraza.
Yeah. Who does most of the recent DC direct-to-video animated movies. So at least
he does all the
in-continuity ones. Yeah.
All the in-continuity ones. He does Young Justice, and he does...
Young Justice. Every time Jordan mentions Young Justice, I smile because it's coming back. And that makes me happy. But,
me too.
Yeah, I think it makes just about everybody happy. If you don't like Young Justice, then seek psychiatry.
What are you doing with your life?
Yeah, exactly. So the animation I thought was great from my perspective. And... general thoughts before we get into specifics. I really enjoyed this. Like I said, I recommend watching it. Watch, if you have the time, watch this and then watch the crossover from last year. I think it'll enrich the experience. But I really enjoyed this one. What about you guys?
I enjoyed it for its own sake. I thought it did a nice job of letting us get to know Ray a little better.
Yeah.
But it's not a prequel. It's the way that it was, and I think this may actually explain the wonky IMDb description, because it's probably from some official press release from back in the day. The problem is that I don't think that Ray was originally intended to be in the crossover. I think that he was sort of retroactively inserted once they found out that Wentworth Miller was coming back, and that they devised Citizen Cold, and they wanted to give him a love interest, and then they kind of thought they wanted to introduce Ray in live action, and so they kind of killed two birds with one stone. That's the impression I got, because in the animated series, it's supposed to take place in the same universe, in the same continuity as the Arrowverse, where Cisco is the same age as he is. He is more or less the 2017 version of Cisco that we see, but Ray is 22 years old. Now, this is not a diss on Russell Tovey. He looks great for 38, but he cannot pass as a 22-year-old. I don't think he's supposed to be a 22-year-old who just came out to his family and what have you. I think that Mark Guggenheim himself, has said that this is a prequel of sorts, and that it doesn't really neatly fit into the Arrow versus continuity. And I think that's part of the problem that they're having with making more, is the fact that they filmed 12 episodes. They recorded the voices for 12 episodes up front. This was before the crossover was ever written.
Okay.
And then they sort of awkwardly inserted Ray into the crossover, which, by all means, that was one of the highlights of the crossover for me, was the relationship between Ray and Citizen Cold, which is lovely. And then now they don't really know what to do with the series. And I haven't heard that they are making more. I know that Russell Tovey has said he wanted to make more, but I think they are going to make more because they just don't know how to make it fit with current continuity, or it's just kind of will be its own AU or what have you, but the Rey that we see in the animated series is not the Rey that we see in the crossover.
You see, there are certainly some continuity errors in this. I'm going to go ahead and call it a full movie. I'll go ahead and call it a movie. There are definitely continuity errors, but they're not blatant enough for me to the point where I can't sort of write them off as just being that, as being continuity errors. I can still sort of fit this sort of like when you have a puzzle piece that doesn't quite fit into the puzzle, but you kind of are able to wedge it in there. That's sort of the way I look at this, and so it's sort of like it doesn't totally match up with continuity, but it's close enough that like I still totally do consider this canon. Like, I think another thing I reference as similar to that is like the Supergirl tie-in comics that Sterling Gates wrote. Those have been sort of or the Arrow Vengeance novel. These are two examples of tie-in Arrowverse materials that have since been retconned by the shows themselves, but parts of them are able to still remain in continuity, so I still consider them canon. I just, they don't quite fit together how they should.
Yeah, I feel like they aren't so glaringly incongruent that they're impossible to... They're not, you know, but I did experience a little bit of cognitive dissonance. I watched the crossover first, and then I watched the show, mm-hmm. Like most people probably, because I watched the show when it first came out, like the movie,
I
guess.
I think the show, the first, because they released the first season on CWC, I think slightly after the crossover.
Right, it was in December, right.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Well, it was a couple weeks after. They showed the first six episodes, and then they called the second half of season one, they renamed it to season two, and then they released it recently, which is, you know, that's not unusual, but I think they will have to do a lot of work to bring the animated series in line they'll have to age him up big time. They'll have to somehow maybe change how old he is, because he's the Rey that we see in the crossover is definitely not a kid who's just came out. He's a seasoned fighter. He's got a stable relationship. He doesn't want to come back to Earth. He wants to stay in this, you know, hellscape of Earth X, despite having a difficult family here on Earth. But if you measure that against what he's choosing to stay in Earth X for, like, we need to see that journey is, to me, it has to be a very complicated and complex one just by definition. And so I think for them to make the two, you know, join up at any point, I think there's going to either going to have to appear in live action and get to know him a little bit more there, which he said he's open to, the actor said he's open to as well, or we're going to have to see way more backstory and way more motivation in the animated series. It didn't fit very well for me, but I enjoyed them both for what they were. Yeah.
That's fair. Yeah, I mean, what I did like was I did like exploring his sort of struggle with the decision of coming out to his parents and all that stuff. That was, again, it's fascinating to see play out, because it's within this this fantasy kind of world that, you know, the Arrowverse gives us, there's elements of realism that you can still, with all this stuff happening, I mean, we're going to a world where the Nazis won and take over. So, I mean, in that and of itself is you know, out of this world. It's you know, sci-fi to, you know, but to ground it with something like that so many people go through of having to, you know, to come out to their parents and what that's like. I really felt that they handled that. You know, that was the, to me, there, that was the they spent quite a lot of time on that, and you know, and I thought it was very well fleshed out. I thought his struggle and you know, the friendship that he had, and then, you know, the little bit of him sort of meeting his boyfriend at the time, all that seemed to me to be very realistic and believable and sort of true to life, if you will. So that all worked for me, and I like seeing it because, you know, I've often said on this podcast, it's great for shows and media to say, yeah, we're embracing, you know, this, and we're embracing all this, but to say it and just offhandedly mention it is one thing, but I think it's important to sort of, you know, emphasize it and explore it, like, in a visual sense. And so, you know, what I mean is, like, if you look at, as an example, Solo, right? There were these articles that were talking about the Lando character being pansexual, but they never, it was in an article, it was never shown or dealt with in the film at all. Like, there was not even,
It wasn't made explicit.
There was nowhere a mention of it, right? So again, I love that even in an animated movie or slash series, whichever way you want to look at it, the CW, DCCW is putting their money where their mouth is and actually saying, yeah, we're gonna have these characters and we're gonna back it up by showing it and not just explaining it away in an article. And I thought they did it very well. I thought it was done very well. It felt like a natural. Everything felt like a natural progression. It wasn't something that was overdone or you know, like too cheesy. If you try and force something, it doesn't work. I thought it all fit nicely here, and I thought
it felt authentic.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that aspect of it.
Well, what's really cool, a lot of people may not realize, is that having Russell Tovey and Wentworth Miller portray these characters on the crossover had its issues, to say the least. But yeah. One of the nice things about that particular relationship being portrayed, that's the very first time in all of superhero live-action media where two male gay actors played two male gay superheroes. That's never happened before on any movie or TV show ever, like in a relationship. That's never been portrayed.
So
that was something that was, I know it's very special to the actors. Russell talked about it on his social media extensively. He talked about it in interviews. It was something that was very meaningful. They definitely, to me, felt very authentic as a pair as well. I think it's something that means something to the people that are doing it. So certainly if they get a chance to do more, I would like to see more. But I think another problem they may have with the animated series, unless we do it as a backstory, unless we do it as a prequel or what have you, the problem is that in the Arrowverse, in the live action Arrowverse, the Earth-X subplot has been more or less resolved. Because in The Flash, we saw that, you know, Siren, I forget what her, the Black Siren version of Earth-X.
Yeah.
I forget exactly what her code name was. I think it was just plain Siren.
I think you're right.
Siren X.
That's right.
Yeah. Excuse me. So that she was like the last holdout, and they had basically won. Like they're you know, Ray and Citizen Cold and General Schlott, they had all won. So.
It would have to be. If they do more of these, I think it would have to be more prequel. And I'm fine with that because I like exploring the world. So to me, that's fine if they go that route. But I agree, to me, it would have to be more prequel. I agree with you. Jordan, what did you think of the way they handled the whole thing about Ray and having to, you know, come out to his parents and the relationship he had before going over Earth-X, what did you think of all that? How did you think they handled that?
Yeah, I thought they handled it great. I thought that they did a great job getting you invested in Rey as a character and in that relationship as well, seeing that I really wanted actually the dynamic, actually, you know, John spurring him on, giving him encouragement, you know, go over and talk to him. But that was one of the other highlights of it for me, was the dynamic between Ray and John, their friendship.
Yeah.
I thought it really cracked me up. John had some of the funniest lines in the whole thing. Like his thing about, oh, my grandma has a paperweight like that. Okay, yeah. Maybe not exactly like that. Like that was one line that cracked me up. But I mean, starting out the series or the movie, however you want to look at it, I know I said I was going to look at it as a movie, but then I said series, so whatever. But anyway, so how it starts, it starts you off with this epic action scene where you've got the highlight of that for me was Overgirl. She's like blasting Red Tornado with her heat vision. Like, that was so intense, and like, that was awesome. And then it moves into, so you get that epic action scene to start, and you move into some of the more personal stuff, getting back to Earth-1 Ray. and sort of it moves away from Earth. The way they balance the stuff on Earth X with the stuff on Earth One,
yeah.
I thought they did a really great job with jumping back to that. And, you know, you see that relationship develop with Red. What was his boyfriend's name?
Oh, that's a good guy.
I don't think he was really, like, even a boyfriend. I mean, he was just a guy that he was just sort of, like, maybe wanting to date.
Yeah, I can't remember his name. That's
well, they went out several times, I thought. I mean,
I think by well, the end, I think they whatever they were going for ended because at that point, Ray was unwilling to be honest, right? So.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, no, it ended by the end of it.
Yeah,
but anyway,
that guy took off. Yeah, that guy left.
I don't remember what that guy's name was, but anyway, so you sort of see that develop, and
he was the Richard White
Jacob.
Of this.
Jacob, I think.
Thank you.
He's the Richard White of this particular show slash movie. Eventually, he's gone.
Analogies.
Yeah.
The second Superman Returns analogy.
Yeah. We haven't even reviewed that movie yet, but we're making analogies.
Well, no, I thought that was great.
Yeah. You brought up the best friend angle. I think that was really cool because, you know, when Ray's talking about the other Earth me, he's kind of like, are you serious? Like, and it's sort of the casual disbelief.
Oh, and the chair thing.
With the TV. Yeah.
You don't like that chair, right? And they tried to blast it when it hit the TV. No, but I did love that TV.
And he's like, I'll pay you when I have a job.
Yes.
And now he's staying on Earth X, so I don't think that guy's getting paid. So it sucks to be him. But I mean that was very like even the casualness of that like sort of where the friend didn't overreact kind of speaks to the like you know his best friend was saying you're shitting me, right? Like,
you know what it reminds me of? What we see from Billy and Freddy in the Shazam trailer.
Yeah, there's some of that. That's a fair analogy. I like that one. I'll go with it. and the other like, just before we get to Overgirl and the other, the Arrow characters we do see, but the characters that they've created the Freedom Fighters, it's called, because that's what they're called. I love that we got bits and pieces of them too. That was something I wanted more on each of those characters. I don't know about you guys, but I felt like I could have used a little bit more of their.
They were pretty cool. And I like the fact that I like the parallel of their our Earth counterparts, where these guys are going to be his ride or die buddies.
Yeah.
No matter what universe. That's one of the main appeals for me of alternate universe stories is that. It's just seeing the bonds that persist among multiple versions of people, and just the fact, in The Flash, how Iris and Barry are always, together in whatever iteration they are and whatever Earth they are. And, those kinds of bonds, I like to see them. I like to see how they all play out. And I like the fact that Jenny and John were Freedom Fighters on Earth X, but
They had that heroic sort of, they were doing, they were helping others on Earth One as well, but in a non-costumed, super-powered way. I get what you're saying. That was a nice touch.
Lady's powers are some of the coolest. Like those looked so cool. Yeah, the way they did the effects on that were so.
Yeah,
cool.
The action sequences were well done. I will give them a lot of props for that. And again, those characters were great. I just wish I wanted more with those characters.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, okay. My bad. I was just going to say, I would have loved more with them too, but I understand that it's mostly, it's Freedom Fighters the Ray. So Ray's the main character. Even though, I mean, it's a Freedom Fighters movie, but Ray is like the star. It's sort of like Batman and the Outsiders, You know what I'm saying? Like Batman's the...
The focus, yeah.
Yeah.
Focus,
yeah.
Yes.
No, I was just going to say that I like that they are a squad on all Earths.
Squad up, quote the Suicide Squad mark.
I don't know how much interest there is, just from a fan perspective or even from a creator perspective, of exploring Nazi Earth. I don't know how much more of that we need to see.
Yeah. No, yeah, I get what you're saying, yeah.
But there are 52 other Earths, and the fact is they're called the Freedom Fighters, and I think that's where I'm jumping ahead of the discussion, but if they do make more of the show, which you know I hope that they do, but if they do make more of the show, what I would like to see is for them to maybe help out other Earths that are not quite as much of a hellscape as Earth X were, but you know just being multidimensional. Now that they know it's canon in the series through Cisco that they can, you know, jump through to different Earths, that might be a direction that they could go in instead of having to retreat. Okay, we get it. You guys are in, you know, a Nazi hellscape. And I don't know how much more of that we can, you know, people are really want to sit through. But there's a lot of potential with these characters to do just a lot more adventures across the multiverse.
Yeah.
It just reminded me of one of my favorite lines from the movie, which was when Ray's like, yeah, my friends would tell you to go to hell. He says it's to Overgirl. And she says, that doesn't sound... What is it she says? She says, that doesn't sound too unpleasant, actually.
Yeah,
it was something that affects. But I was like, oh, that is like a perfect evil line. I love that.
And just to speak to what you were saying before, Jordan, I like the fact that, you know, you see them have a mini victory at the beginning of the film, but then quickly you realize that it wasn't. So there was... I think in terms of the Freedom Fighters themselves and sort of their battle with their sort of Nazi overlords, if you know. It wasn't just, you know, I think the struggle and the sort of the hellish sort of world they're living in, I think that was very well handled in terms of like, it wasn't just, you know, some especially with some animation, the transition to the good guys, quote-unquote, winning is too quick. And I thought this played out, again, the pacing of it was on point. I do want to call out what an awesome performance I think Melissa Benoist gave as Overgirl. I think, and I don't think she's done much animation. This might have been her first. But I thought she was, when you compare it to the Supergirl she plays regularly on her Earth, the range that she has, I mean, we saw it a bit in the crossover, but also just here vocally, I thought it really emphasizes her range, because I thought she was pretty intimidating and pretty formidable.
I'm with you.
She was great. I liked seeing the Earth One, Green Arrow, and Flash, yes. and that banter about, you know, where Flash is talking about what he's going to offer to train you, you know. Between Flash and Mr. Terrific, and the banter when they're sort of playfully insulting Oliver, I thought that was hilarious.
I love the continuation of the gag where Mr. Terrific, we saw this on Arrow when he'd like say suit up when Oliver wanted to say it, and so like he warns, he's like, oh yeah, he doesn't like when you steal his thunder. He says that here in Freedom Fighters Ray. And then there was another gag that was a recurring gag from the Arrowverse, which is of course in the first big Arrowverse crossover when he shot Barry with the arrow. And then we see him do the same thing to Ray here. So
or what about when who was it, when the Flash super sped them to wherever the location they had to go?
Oh yeah, Ray almost threw up.
Yeah, and it was, you know, it was a call back to Diggle, which always cracks me up when Diggle does it, because it's still going on even now after all the, you know, he's been used to it at this point. But
I don't think he'll ever get over it.
Yeah, no, but I love the training montage. Again, it was a nice call back to the early days of the Flash when they had that first sort of mini, you know, the mini crossover, if you will. Mm-hmm. So it was a call back to that, and sort of Oliver helping him work through, you know, again, his issues with having to, you know, muster up the courage to open up to his parents.
Matthew Mercer did a really good Stephen Amell.
Yeah, it was a good impression. Although having, you know, what is it, 6 seasons worth of Stephen Amell, you could tell, if you've been watching Arrow long enough, you could tell it was him.
You could tell. It was still a really good.
Same with the Flash, and like that was the cool thing was, the cool thing for me was hearing Melissa Benoist, hearing what's the guy that plays Cisco's name?
Carlos Valdez.
Yeah.
He shares my last name.
Yeah, but no relation. Otherwise, we'd have him on the show.
Unfortunately not.
He would have been the co-host, and you would have been, but no. And then I think Danielle Panabaker was briefly her voice, right?
Yep.
So
and Megalyn EK came back for Vixen.
Yeah, and by the way, it was nice to see her back as well. You know, the OG sort of. Well, technically in the Legends timeline, she's not the OG, but in the era, she is sort of the OG Vixen. But anyway, it was nice to see her back. But yeah, I loved all that stuff. I loved the even though it was sort of not really, it wasn't the smoothest in terms of continuity. I loved seeing those versions, you know, those TV counterparts in the animation again.
Oh yeah,
it's always fun. And again, the training montage, like I said, I really enjoyed that part and how Oliver was instrumental.
The things that didn't quite fit into, you know, the Arrowverse, it's stuff that really couldn't be helped. I mean, the show was filmed significantly before they ever thought about bringing, as far as I know, before they ever thought about bringing, you know, Ray Terrell onto the live action.
Yeah.
I know that they wanted to, and then they brought on Russell Tovey because they wanted to have the same voice, but, you know, I don't think that it was like anything that wasn't, you know.
It's unavoidable. It was unavoidable on their part. You can't.
But going forward,
It's
not like you said. It's not something irreparable. It's not something where like they can't ever make it fit. It's just a few weird things that they have to maybe either gloss over or retcon or something. But they can do it.
But all that stuff, all that stuff was great. And again, like I said, seeing just them helping as the seasoned heroes of this universe, helping the Ray in his journey and master his powers. I think that was fun, and that's always been fun. Whether it be on, you know, like again when Flash and Arrow first came, that was that was the most fun of the episode was seeing how Oliver approached sort of mentoring Barry, and sort of, like he saw and what this animation shows, or this animated film/series shows, is that Oliver's mellowed a bit, but his methods are still he's a very stubborn. Like if you haven't clued in on six seasons of Arrow, while he's a little bit malleable to changing, he's still a stubborn SOB when it comes to being stuck in his ways, and that's very evident here. So
and the fact that they carry over Blake Neely's themes just every time, every time, I just get hyped every time.
The little hints of the different musical themes were great. Yeah, I did like that quite a bit. That was a nice touch. I mean,
as far as origin stories go, I think that the movie was really solid in that regard because you really got to see who he was as a person, and you also got to see where he started getting the inclination to think of himself as a hero and to think of himself as somebody who can do extraordinary things and make an impact on multiple planes of existence there. So I like the fact that he started out with, you know, the Arrowverse people, Arrow, and you know, with Oliver and having ties to Cisco and things like that. But eventually, like, hopefully that, like, it leads down a trajectory where you get to see all the other people who have influenced him and who shaped him and kind of become his own hero. Because he was you know, just a very fully formed superhero when we saw him in the crossover. So just I would be really interested to see how he got from point A to point B.
Yeah, and there are ways, like you said, the way they left it off, there are gaps in the animation, if they continue, that could fill in and explore.
We saw a fair amount of development for him over the course of this film, because at the end, like, I feel like he's grown a lot even by the end of this film when he embraces being a hero for Earth-X. He's like, okay, you guys need me more. This is my calling. And like his sort of like rousing motivational speech, I think it's incredible at the end when he's sort of rallying the troops together, the resistance, when he's rallying them together for that big final battle that we get. And by the way, that big final battle, his heat bit, which when Overgrowth doing the heat vision and he's doing his light beams at her, that was so epic. But yeah, that rousing speech that he gives to get to that point, I thought that was one of the most powerful parts of the movie. I love that.
Yeah, no, it was very well done. And like I said, I agree with you. I think the action scenes were very solid and very well done. I mean, I usually with animation, I can say, well, they're doing stuff they can't do on TV, right? On live action. But I can't say that with the Arrowverse because they've done a fantastic job of you know, especially in these crossovers, of orchestrating these big, you know, set piece kind of moments. So I can't really say, you know, it's something they can't do on the show because they've done it. So
I still can't get over how cool that the fight scene at the wedding was at the beginning of the
movie. Yeah, that was pretty awesome. Yeah. it's getting me hyped for this year's crossover. But yeah, I mean, is there anything we missed that you guys want to specifically shout out? Is like stuff that we didn't cover that you wanna bring shed light on? Pun sort of.
I couldn't say that the additional footage that wasn't because. It's the two seasons of CWC combined, plus quite a bit of additional footage. Mostly thrown in there in the middle, I think. But, like, yeah, I think that added to Ray's arc as well. Like, there's the scene with sort of wrapping up that storyline with, what is it, a congressman, a senator, the guy he flattened.
Oh, yes, yeah.
So that was, like, that was additional, some of that additional stuff with him saving people. I thought that really enhanced the story. I mean, I already loved it. I'll go ahead and say, I already loved this when I watched the truncated version on CWC. I already loved it then, but I loved it even more watching it as a full movie with that additional footage. After that additional footage, like wrapping up that congressman storyline, I thought that really added to and enhanced the story.
Yeah, when
I think his name was actually Donald. wasn't it?
Oh, the mayor?
I think so.
Oh, that's maybe. I think they added that in on purpose. I wouldn't be surprised. But him sort of blackmailing and intimidating the mayor is a very Batman-ish thing to do, which I was like, hey, it's very...
that's true.
And it actually reminds me of a scene, or a similar scene in Batman the Telltale series, which I started playing during it. I mean, you'd be happy to know. Finally.
Okay.
Yeah.
You started playing.
Yes, I have. Awesome. Yeah.
And you're enjoying it so far?
Oh, yeah, definitely, for sure. So it reminded me of a scene in there, which I was like, oh, I just recently did this kind of sort of thing. So yeah, it was that
yeah,
was
Ray's got an edge, like that's yeah, the thing, he's got that buoyancy of personality that Barry has,
yeah.
But he has an edge, he definitely has an edge there that's a little dark and a little,
he's kind of sort of in between Barry and Oliver, if you will, sort of,
yeah, a little, and he's got a little
he's the Ultron of, if you will.
Oh,
so,
no,
here I go, I'm all full of connected
analogies.
Now I'm changing universes since we're hopping all over the place.
Multiverse.
That's right. Exactly. And I can mention Marvel if I want because it's my damn show. But anyway, yeah.
Sorry.
What's that?
I was just going to say another really funny scene that I loved was when he introduces himself to Vixen and he's like, when he says, like, I'm the Ray, my real name's Ray, though. And she's like, I don't think you understand how code names work.
Yeah, they're like, you might want to keep that. Yeah, that was kind of funny. But no, it was, yeah, I like I said, I. Look, you know, continuity sort of wiggling aside, I really, really enjoyed this one. I thought it was, it's converted me to watch most of the CWC stuff in this form because I can't take that 5-minute segmented stuff anymore. It just after seeing that, I'm like, okay, this was much more, it just flowed better and everything else. So yeah, I like I said, I'm very high on this. This one, and I enjoyed it. If there's nothing else, the one thing I will say, and I'll get your thoughts on this, watching this and how this was sort of coordinated, you know, after the fact with the crossover and whatnot. As I'm watching the animation, I thought of two things I'd like to see. I don't know if they'll ever do it, but I'd like to see it. They're doing Batwoman in the crossover, right?
Mm-hmm.
At some point in the interim between the crossover and the live-action Batwoman series, I'd like to see something like this.
Oh, that would be cool.
Again, I don't know if they're going to do that because they are giving Batwoman her own series. So that, you know, chances of that might be slimmer. But then I had another thought. And Jordan, you're going to get excited, but contain yourself because it's just my ramblings. It's nothing official. So contain yourself. Sit down, strap yourself to a chair, whatever you have to do. But, you know, Tom Welling and Michael Rosenbaum were talking about animated Smallville.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would love
to
see.
Which they talked about again at DragonCon, yeah. By the way. They're still pushing it.
Have they talked to anybody with significance at DC? Because that's what
they talked to Al Goff about it.
Besides him. They need to talk about with people that actually have power now at CW and Warner Bros. Not somebody who's no longer employed there. But, I would love to see a continuation of Smallville. If Michael and Tom and Kristen and the whole and Erica Durance and the whole gang are up for it, do something like this in this animation style. I think it'd be phenomenal, personally.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Or Metropolis, the series, like post.
That's what I mean. A post continue. Yeah, yeah.
That'd be really cool.
Call it whatever you want. Just what I'm saying is continue the Smallville story.
I've said it before. The way I do it is set it after the season 11 comics. So pick up where those ended and give us new stories in that continuity. Like that would be. Oh my goodness, that would be something.
Yeah, it's just.
That would be amazing.
I had those two thoughts as I'm watching. I'm like, okay, they could do something with Batwoman, but they're already gonna give her own. And look, I don't know if I've verbalized this on the last show or not, or the last couple shows, but. They can tell you that, oh yeah, we're doing a pilot for Batgirl. We'll see how it goes. That's the biggest load of BS I've ever heard. The minute they cast Ruby Rose, this thing is going to series. There's no doubt in my mind. So this idea that, oh yeah, it's a pilot and we'll see, yeah, I don't buy it. That thing's going to series.
I don't know if I. No offense, I don't know if I agree with you. I don't know if it's a given. I don't know. I think that because typically when they've done that, like with Legends, that's what they did. They ordered the pilot,
yeah,
and
right.
Before the pilot ever aired or before the pilot ever filmed, they ordered it to series. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's not impossible. I wouldn't be surprised if it happened, but I don't think it's a sure bet. I don't know. I think that the CW has a lot of. It's not even a question. It's not even for me about. The quality of a Batwoman series or how Ruby Rose would perform. It has nothing to do with that. To me, it's almost a logistical consideration just because they have so many returning shows and only so many slots. And I know they're opening Sunday nights to try to make more room and things like that. So I think it's almost a matter of like where they're going to, you know, what kind of room they're going to have in their schedule and how much it costs, because budget is definitely a consideration for CW shows.
But Batwoman would probably be cheaper than Legends.
Because we don't have Firestorm and Adam.
Because I mean, look, Arrow's on season 7. I think one of the shows will come to an end. I just don't know which. If I was a betting man, and just my personal opinion, and I know both of you might get upset at this, because but it's either going to be Arrow or Legends. I think one of the two are not going to be back after this season. So I think that'll make the room for it. But I think for me, I can't see them not pushing forward with a full on Batwoman series. But so I don't think the animated thing is gonna go the Batwoman route. But I would love to see a Smallville take on that.
Jordan does not agree with that. He's just not for that at all.
Yeah, he's very disappointed at that idea. You can tell.
Very, I can tell. Yeah.
But yeah, no, I thought it was great. Is there anything else you guys want to mention about the movie / CWC show, or do you want to?
Not about that, but I will mention one more thing about the Smallville Animator Union. When Tom and Michael talked about it at DragonCon, they sort of asked.
What was the response like?
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. They asked the crowd, they were like, would you guys watch that? And like the crowd just erupted. So like I'm really hoping that they're encouraged by that, and they do maybe, like you were saying, Adam, talk to more people at WB. I mean, I love that Michael talked to Al about it, but you know, like you were saying, talk to more people, talk to people who are currently involved with WB.
Yeah, I mean, they'd have to, I would assume, you know, if they ran it by Greg Berlanti and then he took it to the studio, they'd probably say, yeah, you want to do it? Go ahead.
I'm sure. I mean, Michael has a good relationship, I'm sure, with WB Animation, just from his voice work.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm sure he has some contacts there. He could.
I mean, look. I think if those guys want to do it. Kristen said she'd do it. I'm sure Erica would do it. She's been on Supergirl now, so why not? So yeah, I mean, Allison Mack would be a little bit of a problem, but you can work your way around that. But yeah, I would be all for it. So I hope, like I said, I hope that idea gains traction.
I would not at all be surprised if we saw a wider variety of shows like Freedom Fighters the Ray, because every time they've released something new, it's been more successful than the previous. So, for example, like, I was a big fan of the Vixen series.
Yeah.
The anime series. But from what I read in Deadline and all the reportings about when the first season of The Ray was released, that beat all of their records for any previous original programming on the CW seed. So, like, it was a huge success by their standards. I mean, they didn't release exact numbers, but the representatives for the CW did say that The Ray was the highest number of streaming the first season. I don't have the numbers on the second season, but I know that for the first season, they had the highest number of any original programming that they did. So it was a big hit before all the previous,
yeah.
Overall previous, yeah. Ones. So it just keeps getting more and more successful, keeps picking up steam. I know that having shows like the original Constantine series and things like that, people are familiar with the CW seed now. I think that it's a pretty sure bet how inexpensive they are to produce, how easy they are to produce. I mean, these actors can be in a hotel room.
Yeah, they can do it in their pajamas. Out. Who cares? Like, you know, you just wake up and go. But
it's very cheap for them to produce, and it's successful. I would not at all be surprised if we saw many different ones.
Do you know how? Because I have no knowledge of this particular one, but how was Vixen received on the CW seed? Anybody
from
know
what that? From what I understand, they were happy with it. They were happy with the way that, and I know that the subsequent seasons got better ratings than the previous ones, but they don't release exact numbers, so they keep making more of them. So
yeah, it's like Netflix, right? They're not going to tell you how much, right? They just
industry secrets, right? You know,
yeah.
But yeah, they're happy with it. But I do know that I know that Constantine blew everything out of the water when that got higher numbers than ever. That's what they kept saying.
Well, I mean, that show got screwed over by NBC, goddammit.
Sure.
I don't know, they can't piss
and now
off
people
still
have
them
on. Yeah, now people have them on Arrowverse, and people want to catch up, and they really pushed that on social media, which I thought was interesting because The Ray did not have a big social media push. I follow all the CW accounts on Instagram and on Twitter, and they did not have, they didn't actually mention it for several months before releasing the second season, which was almost very under the radar, not deliberately, but it was very like low key, and it still did very well. So I mean, these are easy wins for the CW. Smallville.
Oh, Smallville would, yeah, so I think Smallville would break the records because, I mean, you just hear the response, and from what Jordan was saying, it was a huge response, and so like there's material there. I mean, I know Jordan wants it after the season 11 comics, but they could use the season 11 comics as a guide. You know what I'm saying? So there's lots of fertile material for them to use, and I think to me a Smallville animated thing on CWC seems like almost a matter of time. And I think it would fit better on CWC than saying, let's do an animated thing on DC Universe. I think it fit better on CWC. Not that I'd complain.
And it wouldn't draw so many comparisons with the original or with everything else. It would just be its own thing, which I think would be really cool.
Well, you can't really compare it to the original because now he's Superman, whereas
right.
In the original he was becoming Superman. So there would be that dynamic. So this animated series or this animated movie, I enjoyed it so much, and it got me thinking about other possibilities. The Batwoman one is one of them, but also Smallville should be something that the higher ups at WB and CWC are considering. But yeah, let's go ahead and rate this movie that we just discussed. So let's do guest first. We usually do letter grades. So what would be your letter grade of this particular?
I would say it's a pretty solid B. I don't know if that's,
Hey, it's your rating. You rate whatever you want.
I will say that I also, in addition to hoping that we see more of it in the animated version, I really hope we see more of the Ray and Citizen Cold and their squad in the live action. who I met too. I think they were a lot of fun and they brought a lot to it and they were very special. So I hope we see more of those too.
Awesome. Jordan, what was your...
going to give it an A, actually.
All right. Yeah. Well, it wasn't Smallville, so I had to ask because it's not a guarantee like it is with Smallville.
Smallville is always an A-plus for me. So
yeah,
you know
everybody knows there's no point in me asking that question because of Smallville. So, so I guess I'm in between the two of you because I'm going to give it a B-plus. Like I said, I really enjoyed it. And
Checking out. It is definitely if you're a fan of the Arrowverse, for sure.
If you love the Arrowverse, then check this out. If you loved the EarthX crossover last year, watch this, then check that out. Or do whatever order you want. I'm not going to tell you what to do. But I'd recommend that. Either way, give this a watch if you haven't. We thought it was pretty solid. Before we wrap up, we want to remind you that we are part of the Batman Podcast Network, hosted by Batman on Film. And we are going to do... our usual social media plugs. I know Andy already did hers, but we'll get her to do it again in a second. Andy, where can people find you online if they want to talk superheroes, Dragon Con, cosplay, whatever they want to talk to you about with? Where can they find you?
Me?
Yeah.
I don't know if I can recommend anybody following me on Twitter. I post a whole lot of comic book nonsense, but if you like that kind of thing, you can find me at Andy Tweets on Twitter, and that's pretty much where I post that. I am also on Instagram. Andy plus Cats, that's where I post most of my cosplay works in progress. I do mostly DC comic cosplay, not exclusively, but I do mostly comic book cosplay. But I love to meet people who like what they call Kate Media, you know, live action media about comic books. So if you want to say hello to me on Twitter, please feel free.
Awesome. Jordan, you're back on Twitter, so where can we find you?
I am indeed. You can find me on Twitter at SmallvilleFanJV and on most other social media, including the DC All Access app, at Jordan from Smallville.
Awesome.
And I also want to salute some iTunes reviews. So if you like what you hear from us, or if you don't, I guess also.
if you don't, direct it all to Jordan. If you like it, just post it in general. No, I'm kidding.
If you don't like it, tell Jordan. Tell me and Adam.
Exactly. Yeah, that's right. I like that division of reviews. That's a good one. And if you want to talk to me about this superhero stuff, you can add Superhero Sci-Fi on Twitter. So come chat with me there. Until next time, have a wonderful week or a wonderful weekend, depending on when you listen to this.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. We hope to have you back if you enjoyed this experience.
We'll find out another
chance to get you back, and we will do that. So
anytime. Thank
but
you.
Until that happens, we hope everybody has, like I said, a wonderful week or weekend, depending on what time of the week you're listening to this. And we'll talk to you next time. So long, everybody.
Lana forever. Bye-bye.